The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
So we're seven rounds into the AFL season, but is it a case of the top three and the rest, Collingwood, the Giants and the Cats, going mighty fine at the moment? But who are the big challenges? We'll try and make sense of it all on the Fox Footy Podcast, where we'll soon be joined by 250-game Eagle and Norm Smith medalist Andrew Embley for a comprehensive look at the teams from WA. Hello and welcome to the show, Ben Waterworth, alongside an elite crew. Firstly, let's welcome a woman currently gracing just as many platforms as Chantelle Newbury, Sarah Ollie.
Who's Chantelle Newbury?
You don't know who Chantelle Newbury is?
Who's that?
One of the great Australian divers.
Ah, okay. I would have. Who was the Mitch guy?
Matthew Mitchum.
I knew him.
Who is safe for this man joining us today as well, Mr. 25.69 kilometres himself, Tom Morris. Hello,
Thank
Thomas.
You, Ben. I can't believe you don't know who Chantelle Newbury is.
Yeah, don't. Hang on. Is that her maiden name or did it change? Was that her married name?
I think
that was her name when she was competing.
I reckon the name's changed.
Probably has.
Also, while we're talking about running, Ben,
yes,
you also put in a pretty fair effort.
Yes.
Almost 24K.
Yes, well, almost 24K.
The so Wings for Life
Wings
run.
For Life. Yes, we ran down the Monash Freeway on Sunday night.
Yeah.
Tom just sprinted off and I didn't see him for another couple of hours. But
that's right. That was terrific for spinal cord research.
Yeah, it was.
In 200 locations around the world. I found it amazing that the world winner in Russia ran 64Ks.
As you do.
Are before we sending the car one, it. That one up to Erasmus? I'm challenging.
No, I'm not. I'm not challenging. We don't trust the Russians, is what you're saying.
Your words, not mine.
I think it's not that he didn't run 64Ks. It's whether he did it with complete legalities in terms of what was in his body at the time.
Do they drug test you?
They don't. Actually.
Can't say
no. Take. Can't say it's that official.
For a fun run.
Well, it's not more than a fun run. It's a competitive run for charity.
It actually is quite competitive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very competitive around the world. But it was great to be part of.
It was great to be part of.
It breaks down everything, doesn't it? Like your splits and your heart rate.
Well, no, we did
your
that.
Cadence.
Oh, that was off our own data, our own yeah. personal
oh,
data.
Oh, okay.
Gathered.
So you used to just big notes
on yeah. the iWatch. Yeah, K okay. by K. So I was going at about between 430 and maybe 450 Ks for 23 Ks and
yeah.
feeling pretty good about myself. And then you hit a wall.
Yeah, you
and
do.
My last two Ks were 6:25 and 6:28, and that is shuffling. Ben.
That's
genuine
Cliff,
shuffle.
Cliff Young like numbers.
I
from
couldn't
you,
bend
Thomas.
My knees.
I reckon that's how fast I would run normally.
Oh well, I've seen you run actually, Sarah.
I hate it.
I've seen you play mixed netball.
I like
you're quite aggressive.
Ball,
despite
yes.
despite the tiredness on Sunday night, you quickly hit the ground running on Monday, Tom, and yep. were straight on to a couple of big breaking stories, and none bigger. Probably your story for the year so far was. Be right up there, Stephen May getting himself caught, another off-field indiscretion. Well, not another off-field indiscretion,
yep.
but was seen drinking on a Sunday afternoon while he's still injured and
yep.
probably won't be coming back for another 3 to 4 weeks. And the club is disappointed with May's
yep.
actions.
So there's 3 points here.
Yep.
Number one, he's drinking while injured, which is a grey area for most clubs anyway. Should you drink?
Because we had Joe Danaher and Essendon a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, well, yeah. Should you drink or should you not drink while in rehab? So to give you an example of this point, North Melbourne at the moment, when you're in rehab, players are not allowed to drink. It's a black and white rule. They are not allowed to drink one beer with family or have a wine with their girlfriend. It's just not allowed. Melbourne don't have that hard and fast rule, but it's still
Although,
frowned upon.
No, Max Gorn was on radio this morning and he said that as far as he's concerned,
it's pretty strict.
Stephen May shouldn't have been drinking.
Yeah, Josh Marnie then had a press conference and said there's no hard and fast rule. So whatever it is, it's ambiguous and you should be careful. I think that's probably the right way
yep.
to put it. The second point here is that he's had a really checkered start to his time at Melbourne, Stephen May, in terms of coming to the club unfit by his own admission, and what Simon Goodwin said, hurting his groin and hamstring, clearly related to his lack of match fitness, getting suspended in the last JLT game, meaning he's not available for round one and now out for at least another 3 or 4 weeks. That's point two. So he's got history of, for lack of a better term, unprofessionalism. The third point, which I think is the most pertinent point, is that Melbourne were frustrated and he was forced to apologise to the club. This would not have been a story in my eyes had Melbourne
yes.
not been as disappointed and had Steve May not been forced to apologise to the playing group. If Melbourne said to me that what Steve May did was probably not quite right, but they don't really have a problem with it and everything's fine, this story I don't think would have come out. But Melbourne, by admitting or conceding that they had a real problem with it, by Melbourne conceding that Steve May had to apologise to the playing group, that's what validated the story. And that's what made it a story in conjunction with points one and two.
Well, particularly because he's on this massive pay packet and he's not out on the park. And by doing this, having, how many drinks, Tom, do you reckon? 4 or 5 pints?
Yeah, well,
Significant amount of alcohol.
Minimum, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's not going to do your rehab any good, is it? And the Melbourne faithful are already frustrated. His teammates, listening to Max Gawn, are clearly frustrated. I know that people on Twitter are frustrated, maybe for different reasons, but can we talk about that, why it is a story? Because there'll be people that look at your story and go, well, what, isn't he allowed to go and have a beer?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Can't he have his own life? Why are people taking photos and
stuff? Why are they robots?
But can you say why the position is different for someone like Stephen May than to perhaps the three of us here?
Well, the main thing is that he's part of a professional organisation.
We're not part of a professional organisation?
No, that requires him to uphold particular fitness standards and physical attributes to perform at his best and help the entire organisation. And if he can't do that, then everything is scrutinised. But again, I'll say it, if Melbourne were allowing him to have a beer or two, then I would have no issue with having a beer or two. So the main criticism, I mean, it's amazing how it's polarised people on Twitter. You've got literally half of the people saying, Steve May, this is shocking, this is unprofessional. And the other half are saying, what, you're not allowed to have a beer, as you said. Now, you are allowed to have a beer in the right circumstance. This is not the right circumstance as an injured player with a club that clearly frowns upon this sort of behaviour.
So I suppose you would have received a lot of social feedback last night.
Probably more than ever.
Because it is a ballsy, it's a ballsy story that you've done. And well done for getting it
Before you continue, at first glance, it looks tabloid.
Yes.
It looks like someone's snapped Steve May having a beer, which is tabloid, and I'm not condoning taking photos in these areas, but when the club has a photo already before you can actually go to the club with the photo, then therefore it's already out. This was going around WhatsApp groups. WhatsApp is a social medium. Yes, I get what you're saying, that it's a ballsy story, but I think once the club admits that he's done something wrong, then it's probably clear cut.
Yes, I 100% agree with that. Yeah. What was some of the social feedback like? I don't know. We don't want to make it totally footy media sounding style, but it is interesting because social media and trolling has become a big issue in our AFL community in recent times, Tom, particularly from a player's perspective.
Yep.
But you certainly copped your fair share, it has to be said, on Monday night.
I got a number of tweets that said, well, at least he has someone to have a beer with on Sunday.
Well, that's factually incorrect, Tom, because you are the most social person I know.
In other words, saying I have no friends. It's fine. You can't educate everyone, and people have a disposition towards journalists, which I think is somewhat fair, that they don't trust the media.
There's cynicism there, isn't there?
And there is a real cynicism associated with it, and I also get that. But if people honestly think that I care that a player is having a beer, they're kidding themselves. Mm. But Melbourne care, and when Melbourne care, that's the story.
Can I just tell the listeners what Tom refers to this kind of story as? It's a whale.
A whale?
A whale.
Well, why a whale?
It's any story, and it's not necessarily has to be my story, it can be any story that sets the agenda for the coming days. Mm. And this, with Steve May being such a big player at a big Melbourne club that is struggling, and there is a narrative beyond the last week or so, makes it, you know, a big story to talk about for people. And you listen to Jared Waitley and Gary Lyon and Tim Watson and RSN Radio, where Max Gawn was on this morning.
On the couch last night, Jared Roosey.
Wasn't Roosey very strong? Another interesting bit of feedback I got was
via Twitter, Tom, or other social mediums.
Yeah, where is it? I'm just trying to look for it.
Just here we go. All your notifications. Yeah.
So 3.5 hours is a session. I personally would call that a warm up and a perfect duration for a chin wag.
Well, who's that? I want to go out partying with them. That sounds fun.
What do you want to call it? I mean, and where do you draw the line? Is one beer okay, but 10 beers is not, but 7 beers is not okay? I mean, these guys.
Is this a lot more about the optics more than anything else?
No, I actually don't think it is. I think the optics would be that if the club didn't care, but he was actually really drunk. Mm. I think this was about the club particularly being frustrated and the playing group being frustrated with Stephen May.
I disagree there. I think the position he's in, he not only has to do the right thing, but has to be seen to be doing the right thing.
That's right. No, you're right. The optics come into it, but I believe that it is more than just the optics. It's actually more substantial than how something looks.
And his claim that it was Gold Coast that had unprofessional standards, I mean, that is really coming back to haunt him now, because yeah. the unprofessional standards are perhaps not just on the footy field, but how he behaves and operates off it.
Well, Gary Lyon was pretty strong on that on the couch, certainly last night, referring to that.
Isn't it interesting when your club is not going well, how everything else seems to be falling out of the bottom of it? So,
well, at the same time, also, that they've just come off this very, very gritty win, it has to be said.
Yeah, they have.
For the Demons. So,
but we see it all the time, and we saw it with the Adelaide last year. The training camp kept bubbling along throughout the season as they kept losing games. The best clubs, they don't seem to have this happen to them, or this does happen, like maybe something with Sam Murray last year, which is still in the works, and they managed to block it out. I hope Steve May gets back. I hope he plays some good footy, but he's still a while away.
So we sort of leads us into the power rankings. So
yes.
the Demons are sort of polarised a fair few people at the moment. Tom, I think you... Well, I'm happy to disclose a little bit here.
Yeah,
of all the power rankings, you had them significantly higher than most. I think you had them 10th in your power rankings, whereas most people had them sort of in that 14, 13, 15 bracket.
Yeah, the reason I had them at... And I think that's exactly where they are. They're mid-table. I don't think they're any better than 8th. I don't think they're any worse than 13th or 14th. It's because I think the last 2 weeks, they've improved significantly. Against Richmond, I think the result was one thing, but...
They only kicked a goal after quarter time.
Yeah, no, but they were in the game with 15 minutes to go.
No, I think the two results from Melbourne in the past fortnight have been overblown.
Who's overblown them?
Well, just that statement there. I feel like the Melbourne supporters think they're back to last year's form or heading towards their...
But I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that they're not... I'm saying they're 10th. Like, that's not anywhere near last year's form. 10th is, by definition, mid-table. I'm saying that the Hawthorn result is a step in the right direction in terms of the way they're able to spread out of the contest when they were all just going at the ball in the first place. They are a long way off finals, and I don't think they'll play finals, but I still think they're a mid-table team that will end up winning between 8 and 11 games, which is what you win if you finish 10th.
What a waste.
We go to the total...
What an absolute waste.
What a waste.
Yeah, it is a waste. Go to the total end of the ladder, though, and most people in the power rankings this week had Sydney 15th, except for one person, Sarah, who had them 18th on the ladder. The Swans.
Yeah.
Are the Swans the worst team in the competition?
I was surprised to see that from Sarah.
Well, no, and actually I'm watching the last quarter here between the Swans and Brisbane, and I thought the Swans were incredibly plucky for almost four quarters because I think they were down 5-1 in that first term, and then they came back 6-1 in the second. So it was actually a really nice game to watch. And you can't always say that about games that the Swans are involved in because they, you know, they do like to have that dour style
ugly
of play. But this was actually a really exciting game, and both teams were in it up until
the
last
18th?
10 minutes. Look, I was probably being a bit emotional with that. You know me, I wear my heart on my sleeve.
You do.
But I think they're a bottom four team. So for me, I mean, 15th to 18th, like there's not much difference there really. I mean, who are the teams above them that they could beat? I was looking at the fixture because I'm trying to work out when I can next, you know, wear my Alealia badge with pride.
And it's not his fault.
And I'm thinking, maybe we can beat North Melbourne. But guess where the Swans are playing North?
Tasmania. Oh, yeah.
If you're playing in a neutral venue this week, you would beat Gold Coast, North Melbourne and Carlton. Minimum.
Yeah, but it's hard to know which team shows up, right?
Well, I think,
it's really hard to know. And, I mean...
I concede you're better than 18th.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
But I just think the bottom four, like, they're all the same.
Yeah, okay, interesting. I think it's a bit flippant from Sarah. As an emotional Swans fan, I can see it.
It did seem like an emotional call. So the power rankings...
is your 10th for the Demons.
I think I think it's reasoned.
The top four of the power rankings is the same as last week: Geelong, Collingwood, Giants, and Richmond. Which is surprising with Richmond after that loss against the Western Bulldogs on Saturday night. Tom, you watched all 9 games on the weekend.
I watched all 9 games,
which is quite an incredible feat.
Well, I'll tell you something: when you're running on a Sunday night at 9 p.m., so you can't exercise and you can't drink on a weekend, doesn't leave much for much else. So I watched all 9 games, and I really enjoyed the footy. I thought the Western Bulldogs played out of their skins. And if anything, I'm more confused about the Dogs after Saturday night than I was before Saturday night. The fact they can do that and play so abysmally in previous weeks is actually an indictment on their club. Their gap between good and bad is bigger than any other club. Mm. The Tigers, on the other hand, they just look a bit slow. They look a bit stale. And they just...
Have they reached the tipping point with injuries?
Potentially injuries have hurt. But I also think it's a really tough competition. The cycle is tough, and there's no guarantee you're going to be able to perform at your best every single year. I think the Tigers will challenge next year. I can't see them challenging this year now.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm I'm a bit more bullish on the Tigers. I think when they start to get more players back in, I mean, I think Trent Cotchin's absence has been really significant, especially with Dusty not being in great form.
Do you agree with Dusty, the criticism of Dusty?
Which is? Articulate it for
me. Gary Lyon said last night that footy looks like a bit of a chore for Dustin Martin at the moment.
Well, he doesn't seem to be doing anything of note. Like, he got 25 touches on the weekend. They were pretty ordinary 25 touches because he didn't impact the game at all. He's biting off more than he can chew. I mean, back in 2017, he could dance around a couple of players, fend them off and kick a goal off two steps. He can't do that now, and he's still trying to do it. And I think without Trent Cotchin, who's such a good two-way runner, he's really being exposed in that midfield. But I think as the Tigers get more players back, as long as they can hang in and maintain a position in that top eight, I wouldn't discount them totally.
I don't know if this is 100% true. I'm not a coach or a full-on analysis, but footy these days is all about system. And if you've got a good system, that can normally take you to the pointy end if needed. Richmond still has a strong system. We're seeing it inconsistently, though, at the moment. But it's almost like they need a little bit of star power back. They need a Cotchin back in order to take that next step, in order to be a genuine top four contender.
And don't underestimate the impact Trent Cotchin has as a leader as well on this, in directing traffic and allowing Dusty to play at his best. Just on Dusty, I find it intriguing because there's two schools of thought. One is that we judge him too harshly because his best was so good a couple of years ago.
Standards so high.
The other is that he's actually not playing very good footy and he's an average to good midfielder at best at the moment. I sit somewhere in between those two things. I think he needs to be better, but I also think that he's never, ever going to perform like he did in 2017 because that was out of this world sort of stuff.
If you're doing the champion data rankings, would you say he's an above average or an elite player, Dustin?
No, above average. You still got to look after him. As in, from an opposition perspective, you've still got to pay significant attention to him. But he's certainly not the player he was. And also, there's the other point that as you get older, it gets harder. Yeah. How many AFL midfielders have we seen still be very good players when they reach their late 20s, but not be superstars like they were in their early 20s? It happens all the time. That split-second step that these young players have is very hard to get when you're older. I watched Jordan Ngoi. A lot of people comparing Jordan Ngoi to Dustin Martin, and I think that's a fair comparison in some respects, not in terms of where they play or even how they play, but just the way they look on the field.
Very explosive.
Very explosive. And Jordan Ngoi's got that explosive lower half that allows him to push off opponents, and Dusty did have that for whatever reason. He doesn't have it anymore to that extent.
It's an interesting watch. We'll see what happens with Dusty as the season progresses on. But now in the Fox Footy podcast, this is where we get a little bit loose on the program every week. It's time for Australia's favourite segment, Fair or Farce.
Fair or Farce.
I love it when Sarah gets vocal.
Husky kind
well,
of voice.
Well, we're starting off with the Fair or Farce to Sarah, which we've sort of already touched on. Sarah, Fair or Farce, the Swans are getting off the hook for their poor footy.
I'd say farce because I think they've been, you know, back page of quite a few papers.
Can I rephrase it?
Yeah.
John Longmire's getting off the hook for Sydney's poor footy. Fair
or
farce?
I also think that's a farce because I think he's got the runs in the bank to be able to have this year where he consolidates this young playing group. I mean, we saw 2 weeks ago, I think you tweeted out it was the Swans, they had the youngest group out there of any team.
Yeah.
And it was the first time since 87 or 97
97,
sorry. I'm adding a decade there. But it's still quite significant. I mean, if you compare it to Hawthorn's list, which has, you know, they've got, I think that's an issue there maybe for Alistair Clarkson because they've got a list. If you look at their age profile, they should be contending. The Swans, their age profile, they shouldn't be contending. And do you know what? The great circle of life. They've hit the bottom of the ladder.
Yeah.
But
for Sydney, it hasn't been a circle of life for decades.
In a semicircle.
No.
Well, if that.
I mean, I'm 28, 29 in June, and, you know, I've been spoiled.
Yeah,
you know?
You have been.
I've been spoiled.
And so have you, Ben, and I haven't been.
Yes. So, I think there just needs to be a bit of perspective here.
Yeah.
Yes, they're not going to win many games this year, but I think if you look at the players 23 and under, there's enough talent there to think that maybe it'll just be a couple of years and they can find themselves back up.
So the next question then, the natural follow-on is
fair or farce follow.
Yeah. Is John Longmire the right person to, use this word very carefully, rebuild this list and get a new contract and let them challenge for a flag in 3 or 4 years' time?
I think we have to see out this season to decide if that's the case.
So hold fire for the moment.
Okay. I mean, he's come down to the boundary line in order, I think, to get a better feel of his players and to be able to give them better interaction, like minute to minute on the bench there. But I think it's going to take more than just being down on the ground on match day for him to evolve into the coach he probably needs to be to take them to that next stage. And I think he said it himself. He said, I need to change as well. So
yeah, he needs to evolve.
He knows he has to.
I enjoyed Sarah's runs on the bank.
Yes,
in the bank.
In the bank, yeah.
Runs on the board, money in the bank. But I enjoy the double.
I'm confusing analogies, am I?
Cricket, cricket and money. Ben.
Two things go well with you, Tom.
Yeah, fair or fast. Cricket does. The most important traits for a team to have in the modern game are speed and skills above all else.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think speed in particular.
In that order, speed then
skills.
Yeah,
no, I would say speed because speed works both offensively and defensively. You can be a quick player that applies pressure and then you can explode away from stoppages or, you know, line-to-line breakage. I think that's definitely a fair call from you, Thomas. And I go back to what Kingy has been saying over the past couple of weeks, that he would take organisation over effort any day of the week.
Interesting, isn't it?
So, and then organisation, a lot depends on your skill as well. So I look at what Collingwood has been doing in recent weeks. West Coast last year, even though they're not executing as well, that was very much about organisation. And I think Geelong are the most organised team in the AFL at the moment, and hence why they sit on top of the ladder.
And they have good speed as well, Geelong, which is something we haven't seen for a while from them.
Yeah, I think it's a big reason why I think the injection of Myers and Rowan and Dalhouse to a lesser extent have just reinvigorated that forward half.
Just on what? Yeah, go on.
Oh, well, do you reckon the Gold Coast Suns are up there with organisation?
Yeah, I do.
Why do you say that?
Well, because if you look at their list, it's not the most talented, is it?
No.
I think Stuart G's a tactical genius.
Yeah,
what he's been able
to do in, how long's he been there now?
A couple of years.
A year and a bit.
Yeah, 14 months is remarkable.
Mm. Yeah. I don't think that Sydney's really missing his tactical nous as well.
Yeah.
And that's probably a subplot that needs to be touched on a little bit further down the track. It's interesting what you say about effort. And when I worked at St Kilda, Ben and Sarah, we would often listen to Alan Richardson talk to his team. And not once was effort mentioned. Yeah. It's an expectation. Yeah. Whereas Grant Thomas used to always say his number one thing was 100% of the effort, 100% of the time from 100% of the players. But now it seems as if that's, as it should be, an expectation. I think the higher level you go up, the more it's expected. And probably the lower level, that's when you get the rah-rah, try harder, go harder at the ball type thing. But more effort doesn't mean better footy. Melbourne can have more effort and all the players go at the footy and then they can't spread, as Gary Lyon and Nick Riewoldt were saying on the weekend.
Often the old work smarter, not harder. Sometimes.
That's right. Sarah, fair or farce, Gary Ablett deserves to get off at the tribunal under the exceptional and compelling circumstances provision that applies for great players with perfect records. Fair or farce?
Farce.
Ooh.
I don't like it. I don't like that there is a rule like this, that there's an exception.
That's a different argument, though, to the rule exists. Does he deserve to be applied to that rule?
I guess if there's a case to make for anyone, he is he's the case, isn't he? 328 games, two Brownlow medals, and never been suspended before. I think only reported once, is
twice.
That right?
Twice. He got a $900 fine for bumping an umpire in 2011.
Look, he's a clean player. No one is suggesting that he's not a clean player. But I don't like that there is a provision for exceptional circumstances.
And compelling.
But this, I don't like it.
So that's where the tribunal comes in, and that's where the Cats will make their case. But on precedent, when you look at what Michael Christian gave Dylan Grimes and what he gave James Cousins, it all reasonably marries up. I think they're reasonably similar incidents with similar gradings that all got one week. So from what Michael Christian's done, that all makes sense.
Yes.
But now it's up to the Cats to try and twist the arm of the tribunal, which has worked in the past.
What about Eric Hipwood? Like, they look to me to be very similar instances on the weekend.
Yeah. Looks like Hipwood had a little bit more malice in it and intensity.
Jake Lloyd was down, and the Swans remonstrated. Dylan Shield got back up and had 33 touches and was fine.
There was a bit of remonstration, but I agree with you. It's careless versus intentional as well. That's the other argument Geelong could make, that it was careless and therefore worthy of a fine rather than intentional. I find that distinction still very hard to get my head around on a weekly basis.
Do you like this exceptional clause that you can go to?
I do.
I think if you've played 328 games and you haven't been suspended before, I think you've got a right to be able to argue that at the tribunal and use that rule to your advantage.
And then it's up to the tribunal whether they agree with that. But I think I like the provision being there because it, like in any, as you know, Sarah, having a law degree, like in any court of law or judgment case, when you have a situation where the offender actually has a really clean record, that does come into account when you're
sentencing.
When you're sentencing,
yeah,
doesn't
it? Yeah, that's correct.
Yes, well said from you.
Thank you, QC.
QC. Yes.
David Galbally.
Whose go is it? Ben.
Yes.
Fair or farce? Collingwood should let Port Adelaide wear black and white stripes on very special occasions.
Tom. We're getting all sort of Triple M-ish kind of Triple M hot breakfast-ish areas here.
Well, what do you think?
Yeah, it's fair.
think they should let them wear it?
Yeah, I think it's fair. Like, Port Adelaide have just as much tradition as what Collingwood does, and I think we certainly in this state of Victoria can not think outside our own bubble sometimes. I can understand Collingwood.
They joined the AFL.
Yes, I understand that, Tom, but I think...
I'm playing devil's advocate.
I know, but I think we should be a little bit more respectful of the history of some of these.
It's the older club, isn't it? Even though it's not an older AFL club, yeah. It's the older club. I think for special occasions, why not get the prison bars out?
The thing, I find it really hard to argue.
Get them out!
I find it really... Don't say that again. I find it really, really hard to argue because I actually don't give a stuff at all.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
You know, to me, the real point is, why is it up to another club to decide what another club wears?
No, but is it? Because Eddie's getting on radio and pontificating like it's his choice.
That's right. Well, Eddie's allowed to do that.
But is it his choice?
Well, the AFL needs to be stronger and say, Eddie, this is actually not up to you.
Yeah.
And you're not involved in this game. And therefore, Port can wear whatever they want as long as we allow it.
So even though it's Collingwood's home game, it should be an AFL-based decision? Because normally that lies in the hands of the home team, that kind of decision.
Oh, is it against Collingwood? Is that the point?
They wouldn't play in it against Collingwood. Wouldn't it just be for like the showdown and...
Yeah.
Maybe just the showdown?
Yeah,
is that it?
I'm not sure what game it would be.
It would make sense to do it against the Crows, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I think it's a really funny little debate. Sarah, so two more. Sarah, fair or fast, Brendan Gale is the obvious successor to Gil McLaughlin.
I think that's fair.
So you're on Caro's side
here?
Yeah,
I liked that article from Caro. It was very thorough. I think he's the obvious successor because there's no real other obvious
successor.
What about
Steve Hocking?
No, I think he's
Travis
too
old.
New in the position that he's in. No, doesn't strike me as someone who's
so
going
to
be
like
CEO.
Getting, so the last two AFL CEOs, well, actually, no, Gil didn't. Gil had come through the AFL, but Andrew Demetrio came from the AFL PA.
Yep.
Do you like someone coming from Clubland to be an AFL CEO without first having a stepping stone, one below the AFL CEO position?
No, I think Gale is very well equipped to handle that. So he's been AFL PA, Richmond chief executive.
Yep.
He's got a law background.
Yep. He's a very smart man.
Very well-rounded person and obviously a decorated player as well. So I think he's got everything going for
him. He's a very good media performer, Brendan Gale.
Yeah, and that's part of it.
Just gets it.
He gets it.
I like the argument of coming from Clubland because I think you're able to empathise with clubs that little bit more. Yep. I think that's what Steve Hocking has brought to the table. Whether it's been a success, I think it's still early to say, but he certainly understands what it takes at club level.
Yeah, it was an interesting article from Caro, that sort of thing. Because people look to the fact that she's a Richmond person, her father was a Richmond president. But I think there's more to it than that. I actually think that Brendan Gale's a really highly respected person in the industry.
But
at the
moment. That's just not Caro's opinion. That's been talked about for a while now, hasn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
I just wonder how Steve Hocking and Travis Auld would feel if Gale came over the top of them.
I don't think Steve Hocking's only been in the door a very short amount of time. Would he care
well,
that much?
In 2 or 3 years' time, if Gil left then Steve Hocking might care.
It's a big job description that he's got at the moment as football.
Huge job. He's in charge with making the game more attractive,
yeah.
And that's a massive task. Yeah. Ben, last one to you, fair or fast. The odd low-scoring tussle like Crows versus Freo is good for the game.
Yeah, that's fair. And I understand that the frustrations in watching that. It would have been terribly frustrating.
I enjoyed watching it.
For a purist perspective, if you can look past the low scores, and it was one of the lowest scoring games for the past 10 years, I think, from a collective perspective. But we're going to have a game like that every now and then. If that's a one in every 10 years game, then just take it. And it was, you know, listening to the analysis afterwards, it was like Dom Pike and Ross Lyon sort of try to take away each other's strengths, which sort of led to, you know, Adelaide, you know, Alex Keith and Kyle Hardigan sort of staying back a little bit more, certainly. Played out of Ross Lyon's hands, and then Ross Lyon counteracted. So,
any tweets about the low scores?
Oh, was there? What do you mean?
Well, I mean, if that was an AFLW score, we wouldn't hear the end of it.
Whoa,
Sarah!
Wow,
just putting it out there.
Because more AFLW games are low scoring than AFL games.
I'm just saying, it's just funny that there are double standards. Yeah. Anyway, that was fair.
Somewhat double standards. I enjoyed this AFL game, and I think I'd like it once a month. Because it's close. It was 2 goals the difference, and yet it was game over because no one was kicking 3 goals to win this game.
Just on that, so would you prefer a highly entertaining, free-flowing, high-scoring game over, with a 5-6-goal margin, over a lower-scoring, close margin?
Yeah, I would. I'd prefer 130 to 100 rather than 65 to 58.
So the Melbourne-Essendon game in round 3, I want to say, on the Friday night.
Yeah, yeah. No, but I'd still prefer that. But I like the way that footy can throw up so many different scenarios. Mm. And occasionally you get a situation like this, it was like a nil all draw, where both teams are playing formations that don't allow you to attack. And I think it's just great that we can have a sport that presents so many different variables.
Well, speaking of interesting...
That's fair or fast.
It is fair. That was a big addition to fair or fast. And speaking of different scenarios, West Coast find themselves in an interesting scenario compared to, I think, where many thought they'd be landing after round seven. And we've got a great man to on the Fox Footy podcast today to dissect everything West Coast Eagles and chat a little bit about the Dockers as well. 250-game Eagle and Norm Smith medalist from the 2006 grand final, Andrew Embley. Hello, Andrew.
G'day, guys. How are you?
We're well. Thanks for joining us on the Fox Footy podcast. Every week on Mix 94.5, you're having a look at all the WA teams. I suppose you're blessed there at Optus Stadium, be sitting in the media box. It's a fantastic view up there. But from an Eagles perspective, there's sort of a train of thought at the moment that they might be sort of just outside, certainly the top three of the Giants, Collingwood and the Cats in terms of where things are placed at the moment, and maybe even below sort of Richmond and Essendon. Where do you sort of see the Eagles in the pecking order after a decent sample size of seven rounds?
Yeah, interesting. They've certainly haven't been at their absolute best. I think they're just finding their way a little bit. I don't know if they've got the balance of their side right at the moment. I think they've got a few players below their best. They've got some winnable games coming up, and so they've just got to find a way to be able to just keep ticking along. We know it's such an even competition. There's not much between 1st and 13th and 14th at the moment. So they've just got to find a way to be able to just win some games over the next month and see if they can get some players into a bit of form. I think that's going to be the key. But I think from what we've come to expect from West Coast over the past 12, 18 months, they're definitely below their best at the moment.
What's the most glaring hole, Andrew, do you think? Because they have played some reasonable footy, but they only just got over the line against the Gold Coast on the weekend.
I think the contest, and it's pretty obvious at the moment when you have a look at some of the numbers. Now, numbers don't always paint a true reflection of what's happening, but ranked 18th in the competition for contested possessions, ranked 18th for inside 50 entries. So clearly they're not getting their hands on the football at the moment, and that's probably been a bit of a concern. And when you've got a pretty potent forward line, especially with Kennedy and Darling, they just want supply. So they're getting beaten around the source, and therefore they're not able to actually win that football and get the game played in their forward half. And on the weekend just gone, I thought their first quarter was really good. They started to win some footy. They started to get the ball inside forward 50. But after that, and credit to Stuart Jew, he was able to manufacture a loose behind the footy by dropping off one of the West Coast Eagles half forwards. And in the call, I was calling the game for Triple M, and I was really keen for Adam Simpson to man that up, because West Coast were winning the footy. They're going inside forward 50, but once that ball was coming to ground, they were just getting outnumbered at the contest. Mm. They just couldn't maintain any territory whatsoever, and the ball was just coming out too easy for mine. And on the back of that, I thought Gold Coast were able to really use that extra a lot better than West Coast, and for them, they were able to get themselves back in the contest. I think in the second half, they kicked 6-1 at one stage. So I think the Eagles got to certainly get that balance right. I think they might be just a little bit too tall at the moment. Does Oscar Allen deserve to be dropped? No, I don't think he does. But I think when you've got two genuine tall targets in there in Kennedy and Darling, I probably prefer maybe another small to be able to at least get busy front and square to those contests and see if they can lock the footy in, maintain some territory inside their forward 50.
Well, it was certainly a much more improved performance than what they dished up against Geelong the previous week. So certainly some improvements there. But there's a school of thought after that Geelong game where Andrew Gaff's return to the side might hinder West Coast ball movement. So when a stoppage happens or a clearance happens, Andrew gets the ball on the outside, but instead of potentially going long and gaining that territory that you're talking about inside 50, he looks to the side, maybe goes the shorter option, and consequently slows up the ball movement. And the other train of thought is that Gaff has hindered Dom Sheed to a certain extent, which wasn't quite the sense on the weekend. Do you subscribe, I suppose, to the theory that Gaff in some way has maybe hindered the Eagles at the start of this season?
Yeah, I wouldn't say hinder, because Gaff's an A-grader. So
sure. When
A-graders come into your team, you find a way to be able to fit them in wherever that may be. But yeah, you're right. I know a couple of weeks ago, I was certainly saying that I felt Dom Sheed in particular was probably the one player that was not having the same impact on the game purely because of a positional he was spending more time at half forward. Now, Dom Sheed's not a half forward flanker. He's an on baller. He's inside mid. Now, Gaff can play inside. Gaff can play out on the wing. So I think with Gaff spending a little bit more time on ball, that was shifting players like Elliot Yeo to half forward at times, Dom Sheed in particular. So I think West Coast are still juggling with that. I thought they were better with the way that they were able to use Dom Sheed a bit more on ball on the weekend, and they all just seemed to spin a bit more. So they all got time around the contest. And fortunately for West Coast, I thought Sheed, also Shuey and Elliot Yeo probably played their better games. Obviously, Gaff finds it all the time for a while.
Andrew, Sarah here. Now, growing up as a Swans fan in the noughties, I really didn't like you. I mean, you ripped my heart out in this and that 06 grand final. But almost 15 years on, when you're revisiting that rivalry that the Swans and the Eagles had, I mean, what are your fondest memories from that era? And do you think, you know, looking back now, it was probably fair that both teams got one flag in that era?
Yeah, it's a good question. It was a wonderful rivalry. We love playing against the best teams in the competition, and clearly through the mid-2000s, the Swans and West Coast just were, we're always sort of playing some really cracking games in big games. And obviously the disappointment of 2005 was really, really tough, but you know, to our team's credit, we put that behind us and we bottled up that feeling of despair, and we got back on the horse. And 2006 was a incredible year for us, and obviously the grand final itself was another epic. And there's just such great respect, I think, between both clubs. And it was only just the night before the grand final just gone this year, we're in Melbourne and caught up with a number of the Sydney players that we all played against, and there was, almost the 2006 premiership team of West Coast and the 2005 premiership team of the Swans all at a bar together, having a beer and having a laugh and a chat. And I think when you play against some of the best teams and have such a great rivalry with teams such as Sydney, then that respect, goes on and lasts a lifetime.
Now, in 2007, you won 15 games, but you went out with straight sets in the finals series. Are you a subscriber to the premiership hangover theory? And if so, how much can we read into West Coast's slow start to this year? Because it's not easy coming back off a shortened pre-season playing against teams when you're the hunted, is it?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, history says it's very difficult to go back-to-back regardless. So 2007 for us wasn't a great year. Things were, we had some issues off the field, but also timing. When I remember heading into that final series, Juddy was on one leg and didn't play the last final where we got knocked off in extra time by Collingwood. Also, Cuz did his hammy. He wasn't going to come back even if we made a grand final. And Daniel Curtin played that final, that elimination final against Collingwood either. So there was some, we were never probably going to win that grand final purely because our best players weren't available. In saying that, with where West Coast are at the moment, I mean, no one expected them to win the grand final last year. Had a great year. They're probably playing a little bit below their potential at the moment. But as I said, if they can just find a way, and they've got St Kilda this week, which will be very difficult, but it is a winnable game. Melbourne the week after. There's some games there where potentially West Coast, if they can find a way to win, they're 6-3 and well and truly back into the contest, knowing that Nick Nat's going to be back probably in about 5 weeks' time. Willie Rioli's probably not too far away. And they're two players in particular that I think West Coast have really missed.
Andrew, a team that is flying are the Dockers, probably much to some people's surprise. What's the feeling like over there in the West when it comes to the Dockers? And I'd like to ask you about your thoughts on Alex Pearce, because he's being talked about over here, probably not as much as he should have, but he's definitely in all-Australian contention at this point in time.
Yeah, the Freo are going really well. Probably surprised a lot of people. I think there were some concerns maybe around their midfield group that they just didn't have enough depth in there, and they were going to be too dependent on Nat Fyfe, obviously, with the departure of Lachie Neale. But for mine, the player that's really stood up and just been unbelievable at 33 years of age is Dave Mundy. He's just, I just shake my head sometimes about what he can do. And even on the weekend, just gone against Adelaide, just got better and better as the game went on, which you just don't expect for someone of his age that's played that inside big body mid for as long as he has. So he's definitely been a real massive inclusion back into the midfield, where the last couple of years he's been spending a bit of time at half forward. So that's been a big one. And Alex Pearce, yeah, I've been pumping him up for a while now. I think he's almost the Tom Barris of the West Coast Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
He gets the best forward every single week, and he just gets the job done. And I think there's no doubt the back six from Fremantle for a number of years now have actually been really good since Hamling came over from the Western Bulldogs. So you've got Hamling and Pearce as their big tools. Luke Ryan, I reckon, eventually will be an All-Australian. He's just
even with that
better
hair.
And better. Even with that hair. Well, I think with that hair, he's certainly going to start to get a few Brownlow votes. So he definitely stands out. I think when he got it a couple of weeks ago, Ross Lyon said to him, he said, mate, you better get a kick. And to his credit, he came out and had about 35. So he's clearly a confident kid, and he's got a confident haircut to go with it. Wilson, with that run across half back, obviously is really important as well. So they're starting to actually get that back six to really gel together, and they're playing some really confident football at the moment. And I think from what we've seen from Fremantle so far, this next month's going to test them. They've got Richmond coming up, they've got Essendon away, so some real tough games. But if they can be sort of 2-2 through this block, then you know they're 6-4 and well and truly on their way to playing finals. So I think from what we've seen so far, I think Fremantle are going to probably finish in the top eight.
That's a remarkable turnaround for the Dockers compared to where they were last year. Just one more before we let you go. We know how great Dennis Cometti has been in terms of a loyal servant of the footy media for so long. But you work very closely with Dennis and his youngest son, Mark, every week on Triple M. The Beast, as he's called. He's a former wrestler. He does the stats for you. Is he as intimidating as what he sounds like?
He's a good lad, the Beast. He's a big, probably more of a cuddly bear rather than a scary individual. But we both went to the same school together here in Perth. So I've known the Beast, Mark, for 20 plus years now. So we're good mates. And yeah, sometimes I must admit I do kick myself to be in the same commentary box as the great Dennis Cometti.
Yeah.
Obviously, just one of the pioneers of radio, and got one of the great voices, and just to be able to listen to him and even just feed off him and ask him a few questions is something that I do pinch myself at times. So, and obviously Lachie Reid, who I think is one of the best callers in the country at the moment, and so we've got a wonderful team, Tanya Armstrong in the boundary, and again we've been together for probably 3 years now, so we've got great chemistry. We enjoy it. Tommy Atkinson, our producer, and all the guys behind it. So it's good fun every week to be able to rock up there and have a bit of fun and call some footy.
Andrew, you're doing a great job leading all the analysis over there in Western Australia. Good luck for the rest of the season, and thanks for joining us on the Fox Footy podcast.
Yeah, good on you guys. Nice to talk.
Well done, Andrew.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to West Coast Premiership hero Andrew Embley, or villain, if you're
Sarah Ollie. Oh, my
Sarah
goodness,
Ollie.
That 2006 grand final. It's pretty much blanked out of my memory. I remember I was really superstitious, and we had some Krispy Kreme donuts at the time.
Krispy Kremes?
I was 16, so that was like all the rage.
What's changed?
And I started thinking that if I ate a certain donut that we would start winning, and that happened. So I just kept eating this one donut, and then, of course, we lose by 1 point, and I'd eaten 50 donuts. So,
well, it was a win-win, I suppose. Yeah. Or loss-loss.
Nice work. It was an awesome rivalry back then.
It's now time, with Maxi still in Bali at the moment, and good afternoon to Maxi if he's listening in, time for Max's mailbag.
And you make a lot of noise, Sarah.
It's a big, big mailbag as well. Question from Andrew Portbury here.
And this Orders. Is,
after finishing the game against the Hawks with only one available player on the bench, then playing a debutante, Stocker, and a returning player, Tom Williamson, against the Roos, have the Blues players and coaches been unfairly criticised, given they could easily be 3-4 instead of 1-6?
No, the effort they put up on the weekend was pathetic. And that's the prism we're looking through, isn't it? Just this one game in isolation.
And last week against Hawthorn.
No, I think the Hawthorn game, I mean,
they're two separate games.
Exactly. They're two separate games. What they dished out against North Melbourne on the weekend was deplorable. It was a couple of steps backwards for mine.
Shoulda, coulda, didn't. in the end, if you keep losing games, you deserve to be under the pump.
Shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Shoulda, coulda, woulda, shoulda, coulda, didn't. And they're not winning games, and they're actually getting pumped by a team that is going to finish in about their position. That first quarter against North Melbourne, as Sarah said, was abhorrent.
Yeah. It reminded me of the Fremantle game last year where they were hopeless for a half.
Matthew Lloyd spoke about it last night on Sports Day, I think.
Yes.
Brennan Bolton is absolutely the elephant in the room here.
Okay.
Can he take this team beyond this year? 4 wins from 38 games. Everyone's saying, oh, no, it's okay. You know, look at their list. Look how they've been rebuilding. I'm sorry. If you're only in a – is it his fourth year? It's his fourth year.
Fourth.
If you're in your fourth year and you don't win more than 4 games at your club, then it is time for a change.
If we see another game like that from the Blues on the weekend another 2 or 3 times, I can't see how he goes beyond this season. Yeah. But I look at – I'll take the maxi prism here and look at percentage. Their percentage is so much better.
It's better
at the moment.
But this game on the weekend was a big step backwards.
Oh, yeah, it was. No doubt about that.
They deserve all the heat they're getting, Carlton.
From another perspective, this is more the Hawthorn perspective, taking that back. Are Hawthorn suffering from having only one first-round draft pick in the last 4 drafts? They had 2, but Ryan Burton has now gone to Port Adelaide.
That looks like a good move, doesn't it? That's Ryan Burton one.
That's from Joe.
Joe, the answer is yes, but I'm not disagreeing with them taking that path because it worked for them for the decade previously.
I know Chris Pelkin's been pretty big in the past on Hawthorn not going back to the draft and critical of that deliberate decision.
It's a real balancing act. You've got some teams who just go to the draft. For example, St Kilda did for 2 or 3 years and it didn't work. And you've got other teams who don't go to the draft like Hawthorn and they've won bulk flags in the last decade. Mm. So I'm a massive believer in when you do draft kids, it's about who you draft. And clearly your chances increase of getting good young players if you stockpile young talent, but it's not an exact science.
It starts on the board, isn't it? So the more shots you have, the more likely you're going to hit the bullseye.
Exactly.
I think with Hawthorn, though, they've shown that they know who and how to recruit. So if they were to have early draft picks, I would pick that they would nail them.
Yeah.
So perhaps this is the year they go back there.
Question from Dan. Do rule changes and speed of the game need to revert back a few years to save players from burning out at a younger age?
Can we go backwards? Is that going to happen?
No, you can't put the Colgate back in the Colgate tube.
I have tried.
You have?
Bizarre.
Sometimes you just got to push it up and then it kind of sucks back down of its own volition. Anyway.
Interesting talking point.
Yes.
No, not rule changes. My main issue with the sport at the moment in terms of players getting burnt out is the length of the season, not the way teams are playing. So I think probably the game itself is too long. Patrick Dangerfield has been big on this. I'd be happy for the game to be brought back, I don't know, 2.5 minutes a quarter. I think that would make good sense. But it's not going to be because of the ads and the broadcast rights. The season, I think, is the main thing that has to be slightly shorter. That's what's going to preserve our best players for longer.
Gary Lyon takes the opposite tack there, doesn't he? He thinks if there were less games, they'd all be blockbusters and that you could compensate in that way.
As in opposite tack to me?
No, as into what the league will do.
The
league wants to have the season as long as it is because, as you said, broadcasting and all the money that goes along with ads rights. But Gary Lyon says that if there were less games, they would all mean more. So therefore, there'd be bigger buy-in, I guess.
A lot of on-field issues and, I suppose, equity issues around the fixture would be saved if everyone just played each other once, which means it would be a 17-round season.
We've spoken about it on the podcast before. No other league in the world has a situation where you play some teams twice and some teams once, and it's effectively random, and the latter is so heavily compromised because of this very fact. I think it's just bizarre the way it's set up. I get why it's like that now from a commercial perspective, but the integrity of the competition has to be number one.
A couple of questions from the Lawton family here. Hawks Nicky asks, did you miss at Max Lawton while he's been in Bali?
Nope. Max been gone?
He still is. Oh.
Did you miss him?
I think that was just an incorrect tense there. Have you missed Max Lawton while
he's been
in Bali?
Do you know what, Nikki? And you're a loyal woman, Nikki. Hello to you. I have missed Max so much. He does just the little things that we all take for granted. So thank you, Maxie, for being such a vital member of our team.
I think Sarah's performed very well, and I don't think Max is a certainty to come straight back in.
Well, that's a separate matter, Tom.
Speaking of Max, he's tweeted in from Bali with the last question in the mailbag. Do you think they should name the royal baby Grian?
Definitely not. Although it is a boy, isn't it? So you never can tell.
What is it with the fascination about royal weddings and royal babies?
I know you were getting into this area.
Royal weddings especially, because to me, who cares? A baby's an important milestone in someone's life, and I get that a little bit more, but fair income.
You're coming
from
the sort of...
It's all just a bit of fun, though.
Oh, no, it's more than that. So people have parties, and over in England it's an absolute circus. Well, I know that because I'm half English.
It's different there because like, that is their life, like the mom
up why?
There.
But also what
that's
a ridiculous thing.
That's just what they've
thing.
Grown up with.
Well, that's my point. All these people are born into this family, and good on them for being born in, but they've done nothing to get there, and all of a sudden they're putting on a pedestal.
How can you not like Kate and Wills or Harry and Meghan?
No, I do like them as people, but I don't think they're any more special than anyone else.
No, but that's not the point.
Well, it's my point. Okay. Once again,
we're disagreeing.
You can tell I'm a Republican.
Yeah, I was about to say you're in the Peter Fitzsimmons basket.
Oh, I'm a Republican
there.
Too, but I'm all for Harry and Megs. And imagine how cute that little bub's going to be.
All for them as well. Great. Absolutely all for them as people, just not as pedestal-pushing royals.
Okay. Thank you to Royal Family correspondent Tom Morris for his thoughts here on the Fox Footy podcast. The round eight
no,
tips.
No more mailbag.
And cups. No, that's it. Oh. That's it. No, we've going into the tips and cups, and there are some rippers this week. Sydney Swans and Essendon for the Peter Philandia Cup. Peter Philandia, yes. Famous for, Tom.
Tell me.
Bit a opposition right. player's scrotum in a VFL game in 2000.
Delicious.
Western Sorry. Bulldogs and the Brisbane Lions for the Trent Bartlett Cup. Really angry man back in the early 2000s. Carlton and Collingwood, you'll appreciate this one, for the Chris Bryan Cup.
Yeah, no, left-footed ruckman, absolute booming left. Also spent time in the Northern Footy League, from memory.
Yes, and in the National Football League in the United States as well. Was a punter over there. Got towed by Brad Ottens in the 2007 preliminary final.
Could have been Heath Scotland as well.
Yes, a number of Carlton Collingwood players there. Gold Coast and Melbourne for the Matthew Warnock Cup.
Yeah, no, I like that.
Yeah. Yep. St Kilda and West Coast for the David Sirikowski Cup.
Spell Sirikowski, Sarah.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Spell Sirikowski, Tom.
I'm not going to do that.
Port Adelaide and Adelaide for the Brad Symes Cup.
Concussion issues at the end of his career.
Yes, at Adelaide, yes. North Melbourne and Geelong for the... There's a fair few here, but I've gone real left field. Cameron Thurley Cup. Yeah. Real fringe player.
You know who's going to be frustrated about that?
Moons.
No, Lee Colburn.
Oh, yeah. And
he left
Kingsley.
As captain. Kent Kingsley as well.
Yes,
yeah.
bit too good at Geelong, I think, for this. Yeah. Hawthorn and the Giants for the Stephen Gillam Cup. And the always forgotten Graham Polak Cup for the between Fremantle and Richmond. Pick four after Chris Judd in 2001.
Ran into a tram on Fitzroy Street.
He did, yes.
And survived. Good on him.
It is.
Yeah.
Can we see any upsets in the tips or the cups?
I need to look at them now. Hang on.
Well, it's always the first time I look at the games this weekend on Tuesdays when we do this podcast.
And it's hard
Ben.
To know because selection is such a big thing.
Yes,
I mean,
is.
We were all tipping Carlton this time last week. Mm.
Can Sydney win at Blunston Arena? I think they can. No. I really think Sydney can't. Based on.
I think you've got the wrong round.
You might have the wrong round.
I've got a round nine,
but,
sorry.
Yeah. But thanks for that.
Working beautifully here.
Sydney are playing on Friday night. This is live podcast.
Sydney are playing on Friday night. They're playing the Bombers.
Though.
Are they a chance of an upset
That's
here?
Not an easy tip. No, because the Swans are no good at the SCG, are they, Sarah?
Oh, it's just a shocking ground to play football at the moment, isn't it?
Beautiful ground to bat at.
Well, that's what we're talking about,
ask Tendulkar
mate.
And VVS
I'm looking
Laxman.
For any upsets here. Well, I mean, the Suns in Melbourne, that's an interesting one for me. Who's going to go in as favourite to that game?
Melbourne are going to go in as favourites.
So if the Suns win, that's an upset.
Technically, yep.
So then who goes in favourite as favourites? It's actually a great round. Western Bulldogs and Brisbane in Ballarat.
The Dogs down there will be difficult to beat.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Western Bulldogs going as favourites, I think.
But, just. I mean, who's going to... The thing about being a Western Bulldogs supporter at the moment is you just would not know what you're going to get.
The game I'm looking forward to most is actually Hawthorn versus GWS. Because I know that Hawthorn haven't been at their best at all, but they can just pull something out of the bag sometimes when you least suspect it. Mm. And the Giants are humming. And if Jeremy Cameron's fit, who's going to play on here? It's just a really interesting match on Sunday afternoon at the MCG.
Mother's Day. Could be
it is. Happy birthday
along.
To Geraldine. Happy birthday. Happy Mother's Day to Geraldine.
Yes.
And how big?
And Denise.
And Jill.
Yes.
Jillian.
Jillian. Sorry, Jillian.
And there's been a lot of talk, just finishing up, a lot of talk about the showdown on Footy Classified last night, which will be on Fox Footy on Saturday night. Should be a fantastic
encounter. Exclusive to Fox Footy?
At that. Well, it'll be on Channel 7, okay. I assume, in
Adelaide.
Remember
last year's showdown?
You thought the Stephen Motlop?
Oh.
He's floating on air now, Anthony Hudson. One of the great games.
And then Ken Hinckley after it? Is that what he's doing the whole?
5-1, yeah.
Oh, he was very animated.
Who wins on Saturday night? Because I think, according to the power rankings, these two teams are very much in a similar position at the moment.
I'm still a power believer at this point in time.
Okay.
Yeah. Thomas?
No, I'm a power believer because I think they will
Despite
be...
Despite last Friday night?
No, they'll be hurting from last Friday night. And I think they're better than what they showed last Friday night. I also think they actually played some reasonable footy in quarters two and three. Just the way they started was, and also I think Collingwood are an awesome team. And to lose by what they lost by 40 points to Collingwood is actually no disgrace.
So almost sort of a rebound effect kind of.
I still believe in the rebound effect as a guideline rather than a rule.
Just to clarify.
Yeah. Yes.
Because these teams, it's such an even comp, and often it's the emotional side of things that gets them 5% ahead of the other team. And when you lose, there's a real emotional rebound effect that is in play for most of the teams in the comp. And Port Adelaide is absolutely one of those teams.
Kind of Pirates of the Caribbean style. The Pirate Code is more just guidelines rather than hard and fast rules.
Exactly. Have you been to a showdown?
Never been to a showdown.
Yeah, I feel like it's a bucket list item, isn't it?
If you're in Adelaide, try and get a ticket if you
just
can.
Just behind the Masters and Wimbledon
on Saturday night. Yeah. It should be absolutely fantastic. WWE. Great work, Sez. Great work, Tom. That's been the Fox Footy podcast for foxfooty.com.au.
Yo.